It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Farmers in the state are starting to grow hops.
A few years ago, we had the layoffs in the mines and the hard times, and I never want to leave here because this is just a piece of heaven to me. It's beautiful land. I just started looking into stuff, and just hops caught my attention.
What that means for craft breweries is coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The latest episode of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Us and Them podcast focuses on the subject of sexual assault or date rape on college campuses. This is an emotionally charged and delicate subject. Our assistant news editor, Glennis Board, spoke with Us and Them host Trey Kay about the episode titled Reckoning with Sexual Assault, Righting a Wrong.
So Trey, I am really curious to know, first of all, how this subject came to you. Where did you get this story? Where'd you find it?
Well, we've been interested in stories that have to do with the Me Too movement, and we've covered this idea before, but this particular episode got into some real us and them stuff. Date rape, sexual assault, and consciousness over those subjects, and how to remedy and heal from that. And for this episode, we focus on a story that we heard from another podcaster. Stephanie Lepp produces Reckonings, which is a podcast that focuses on stories where people make those kind of critical mass life-changing decisions, you know, kind of like a conversion on the road to Damascus, that kind of story.
Right. Well, then tell me a little bit about the characters that are involved. Where are they? They're college students, right?
Right, they are. There are Anwan and Samir, and those aren't their real names. They meet at a college fraternity party. They dance, they make out a little bit. And then due to some confusing circumstances, Anwan ends up back in Samir's dorm room.
Right, and what happens there might be a little too graphic for our audiences on West Virginia Morning, but what happens afterwards is really what gets into the us and them territory. So it's several months after the incidents, Samir and Anwan sort of go their separate ways. And then at some point they each attend this Green Dot training, which it's this violence intervention and education program or workshops, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Let's just listen to a little bit of the episode to get an idea of what we're talking about.
The prompter said that it's assaults when someone uses emotional manipulation to coerce somebody to like do sexual acts. Like sexual assault isn't just based on like using physical violence. It's also just putting somebody in a situation where they feel like they can't say no. That night, like that night was the first thing that popped into my head. Wait, did I do this? Is this who I am? Like, did this happen? Like, if it did happen, why, like, is that how Anwan feels about this? It's like, well, no, like, you haven't been, like, she would have reported something, but she hasn't. Maybe she doesn't see it that way. Maybe she just also views it like I did, where it was like a bad hookup and like a really awkward hookup. I was terrified that I assaulted her. I was terrified that I had hurt her in this way. I was terrified of myself, because if this was true and I did assault her, then what did that make me? I was terrified of being found out. I was terrified of being sent to jail. I was terrified of all the consequences that come with sexual assault and rape.
Okay, so Glennis, there was a point where on their college campus, they had one of these Take Back the Night rallies. And at the end of the rally, all of these people end up back at this auditorium. And they had this kind of impromptu session where they set up a microphone and they encouraged sexual assault survivors to get up and share their stories. And Anwan didn't really plan on doing this, but she got up and she started telling her story. And Samir was sitting kind of right in the front row.
I was actually sitting about 10 feet away from her. I tried really hard to keep myself together. I couldn't look her in the eye. but I felt like such a hypocrite. But this is supposed to be a space that's meant for survivors and allies. If you throw even a well-meaning perpetrator in there, does that negatively impact the movement itself?
I wanted him to be able to be standing up there with me and speaking the story with me and be able to have the story be exposed in a way that didn't just write us into the categories of like angelic, pure survivor, horrible, evil assaulter.
I feel like it's worth noting that these kids are pretty impressive in their ability to sort of tackle and own their roles here. It seems like a lot to expect from typical people. I don't know, maybe I'm just cynical. But anyway, you explore this concept of restorative justice. Can you just give us a quick explanation of what that means?
So yeah, restorative justice is a process that both sides go through, and they're given the space to be empowered to resolve the wrong that happened. And it's not necessarily designed to punish, but it's to make the effort to heal the harm that's done. And some people might think, well, this is an opportunity for people to kind of get off easy. But Samir says this is actually one of the most difficult things that he's had to do.
Every time that I've wanted to punish myself beyond all belief, she always said, no, I want you to do better. Don't just take the easy route and lock yourself up or get yourself kicked off campus, because that's not going to help anybody. Because she never wanted to punish me. She wanted me to learn. She wanted me to grow. She wanted me to prevent this from ever happening.
I didn't want to take away his agency, because that would just be reversing the roles. I would say what's important to me in the restorative justice process is that both people are given a space where they are empowered to make things better.
So Trey, tell me, what do you pull from this? What did you learn from studying their story?
Well, I have a lot of questions about it. I mean, I think that people who are wronged might feel different ways who engage in the restorative justice process. That restorative justice process is different for different people. I mean, some think that maybe it might be better to involve law enforcement, and that somebody who was a perpetrator has to, you know, face the music with regard to breaking the law and assaulting somebody. But that was not really what Anwen wanted to do. In a way, I think that she and Samir are engaging in a new way of thinking.
Yeah, I love it. I feel like it takes so much bravery, or it would take so much bravery to engage in that new way of thinking. So much kind of trust when trust has been broken.
Yeah.
Well, Trey K, host of Us and Them, I want to thank you so much for joining me and talking about this latest episode.
It's such a pleasure speaking with you, Glennis.
You can find the latest Us and Them episode, Reckoning with Sexual Assault, Righting a Wrong, wherever you get your podcasts. In West Virginia, there are 27 craft breweries, 3/4 of them opened in the last 5 years. Most of them make smaller batches. That gives them the flexibility to make unique offerings. You can find West Virginia beers that contain traces of coffee, berries, even tree branches. Eric Douglas recently visited Weathered Ground Brewery in Raleigh County and brings us this story.
Amid the sounds of the grain grinder, the stainless steel tanks at Weathered Ground Brewery stand like sentinels. Inside, almost 3,000 gallons of soon-to-be beer are fermenting, and another 1,000 gallons age in oak barrels nearby. A typical day at their facility in Coolidge, West Virginia starts with malted grains. They are ground, and then a conveyor system transports them overhead into a large vessel called a mash tun, that's T-U-N, where they soak in hot water. For Sam Fonda, the co-owner and master brewer, after that, the brewing really begins.
It's called wort at the moment. It's not beer yet, but we'll boil that and add some hops. And then after we've boiled it for about 90 minutes, we will cool it down and send it to a fermenter.
That beer, a pale ale that will be flavored with coffee, will be available soon. Others may age for a year or more before they are ready to drink. In addition to the basics, small craft brewers all over the region are experimenting with locally sourced ingredients to give their beers a unique flavor. Weathered Ground buys malted grains from the mountains of North Carolina, as well as hops, fruit, and flavorings from local farmers. Working with his neighbors is a source of pride for Sam.
That's why using local is so much fun, because you can have this personal relationship with your suppliers. It's almost always more expensive, sometimes double. But that's kind of the price you pay for doing what you want to do. We're happy to pay a little bit more for the flavor that we're going for, as well as for supporting local.
One of their local suppliers is J.R. Ward, a hop farmer and full-time underground coal miner who lives just 20 miles or so down the road in Fairdale. J.R. loves the farm he's built with 3,000 square feet of vegetable garden and a quarter acre of hops.
Years ago, I couldn't tell you what a hop was. Didn't even know what it looked like. Did not like craft beer. Then what really made me gun for it was a few years ago, we had the layoffs in the mines and the hard times. And I never want to leave here because this is just a piece of heaven to me. It's beautiful land. I just started looking into stuff, and just hops caught my attention.
The hops he discovered are an expanding part of his business. He currently supplies Weathered Ground with enough hops for 440 gallons of beer in two batches. Starting next year, he plans to expand to 5 full acres of hop yard on his property and is working with a friend to plant an additional 5 acres on a nearby farm. That will make Lost Ridge Farms one of the largest hop growers in the state. But being the biggest isn't what it's really about for JR.
It's just a sense of community to me. You can go to a brewery and be like, hey, man, that guy right down the road grew them hops that's in this beer. That's pretty awesome.
Weathered Ground brews 2 beers with JR's hops. The first is Lost Ridge Pale Ale, named for JR's farm. The second is a nod to JR's other job. It's called Hop Farm and Miner. JR processes all of his hops on site, ensuring they're as fresh as possible.
We do everything right here. I have a pellet mill, I have a hammer mill, I built my own dryers, I have a harvester, so we're set up. And we're the only people in the state that has all that equipment.
JR got the equipment through the state. It is available to anyone who wants to come in and use it. They just have to make an appointment. Besides hops, Weathered Ground sources local fruits and just about anything that tastes good, according to Sam Fonda.
We brewed an IPA a few weeks ago with birch branches, and the flavor that comes from birch is just unreal. A lot of people don't think about that kind of thing when they think about beer, but back in the day, that's kind of what beer was what materials do you have on hand.
Sam was one of many West Virginia attendees at a meeting in April called CRAFT, a farm-to-bottle summit, organized by the Robert C. Byrd Institute in Huntington. Attendees at the summit included farmers and beverage makers from all over the state. Changes to state laws in recent years have made it easier for bottlers and manufacturers to open new businesses, according to Bill Woodrum, the Director of Entrepreneurship for RCBI, and one of the organizers of the event.
The kind of next step we see for that is helping those local bottlers, whether it's anything from kombucha to soft drinks to beer, wine, spirits, to be able to identify local sources for their product.
When Weathered Ground brewed an Imperial Stout recently, they used all Appalachian ingredients.
That beer is actually brewed with Riverbend malt and buckwheat from Epiphany Malt Company in North Carolina. And we used the maple syrup in the boil, and then it sat in cider barrels from Hawk Knob Cidery with peaches grown in West Virginia. It's a very Appalachian-forward wild ale.
There is a growing movement throughout Appalachia for beverage makers to use locally sourced ingredients. It may cost more, but brewers like Sam Fonda believe in the process, and so far they've been successful using that business model. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Eric Douglas in Raleigh County, West Virginia.
This story was part of an Inside Appalachia episode about craft spirits. You can find and listen to the rest of the series at wvpublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.